Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and today on the show, a format war between the album and the single. And later, when cooler heads prevail, singer-songwriter Imogen Heap from the UK joins us for a live performance in our studio. To begin, the band Radiohead acts as a kind of bellwether in the music world. Albums like this 1997 classic, OK Computer, have been very influential, and the same can be said about the group's decision-making. When Radiohead left a major label and released an album on a pay-what-you-wish model, the industry took note. Now the group's frontman, Thom Yorke, says Radiohead isn't interested in releasing albums anymore. Instead, fans can expect a steady trickle of singles and short EPs in the future. This announcement comes just as the four major music companies and Apple are preparing new digital album formats that will encourage you to spend $10 or more on albums rather than 99 cents for a single. But which format holds the future of music, the album or the single? There's only one way to settle this.
Soundcheck Smackdown!
And as happens each Tuesday, we have two gladiators stepping into the squared circle today. Ben Greenman comes armed with a dozen songs loosely bound by a sonic motif and a lofty concept. He's an editor at The New Yorker and author of the funk rock novel, Please Step Back. And Maura Johnston of Idolater.com brings to the table just one song, but you'll never get it out of your head. To both of you, time to press play. Welcome.
Hi.
Maura, you're backing the single. Ben, you're backing the album. Why? Why, Ben? Why is the album still the future of music, even in the digital age?
Because it's better. And
it's better how?
Well, it's better in a lot of ways. I'm sure as we go, we'll figure out all the different financial and creative and practical principles. But it seems like it's more, to me, basically, more of a commitment on the part of both the artist and the listener, and we can start there. I think that's better.
So commitment makes it better. Maura, what about convenience?
Well, there's also such a thing as overcommitment, and I think that a lot of times what happens is that people become so infatuated with the album and, you know, the ideal of the album, and also the way that the album has just been able to expand in the CD era, you know, with more time, that sometimes that commitment becomes just too much, and it becomes too much of a strain for both the artist and the listener. I mean, the rise of the 18-track maxi single, you know, is something that I think we should talk about when we talk about whether the album is a viable commodity. Because in the perfect world, you know, the album is yes, it's cohesive, but in reality, it's often, you know, like maybe seven or eight really good tracks, and then a lot of things that are added in to just make consumers feel like they're getting
seven or eight. You're being very generous.
I'm feeling generous today, so
but,
you know.
But yeah. But just because some buildings fall down doesn't mean we shouldn't build buildings. Is my theory, and that yes, it's true. Obviously, there are bloated CDs, and now with digital release, there could be bloated. They can be bloated on into infinity, really. There's no limit. The album, I guess we have to define what we're talking about, but the album as a set of, let's say, arbitrarily, 10 to 15 linked things. You said a dozen in the intro. Let's say 10 to 15. Mm-hmm. Some might be longer. You get a bonus track. I don't really, at this point, know what bonus track means. It's either on there or it's not. And the question is how they cohere. I guess my question for the singles half of the Smackdown would be, you can unify them by sound, by mood, by theme. If you're going to release an album that's, you know, whatever, piano ballads, and there's a loud rock song on there, okay, it either doesn't belong or it belongs for a specific reason. It's a choice that someone, ideally the artist, is making.
Well, let me ask both of you from your different perspectives, why would Radiohead, you know, having had great success with the album format, why would they now back away from it? Maura?
I think it's a question of nimbleness. I think that they're a band that's really embraced the sort of digital era. And I mean, the whole release of In Rainbows, you know, where they basically announced that it was coming out 10 days before it was actually released. You know, it was something where they took advantage of the time frame on the internet where they could rapidly distribute something to a large number of people. And I think, you know, with this plan, if it does pan out the way it did, like, it'll keep people on their toes about what they're doing. And, you know, I mean, one thing we have to say is, for all of Radiohead's, you know, musical awesomeness, like, they're also really, really great at marketing themselves online. They're probably the best band at doing that that isn't, you know, Nine Inch Nails. And so, you know, they're keeping people interested. I mean, after they announced, after that song leaked of theirs a couple of weeks ago, there was a weekend-wide
hunt. The Harry Patch song.
Yeah. No. There was the second song.
Oh, the second song. Okay.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm totally blanking on the name.
Yeah,
right now. I apologize.
I don't know the name.
You know,
I just...
there was this cryptic message hidden in the file, and people were saying that it was going to be an EP release on Monday, and that wound up not panning out. But I mean, it had people talking about them for the whole weekend, you know, and that's something that I think is probably in their minds as well, because in the digital age, you know, one thing that can happen is that people can sort of forget about you if you're not there all the time.
Ben,
I'll bet Tom York $1 million that they do end up releasing another album, no matter what they're saying today. And I think that, but I think your point is right. They're very restless because they're artists, and artists should be restless. And they have the benefit of consequential restlessness, which is that if they're a minor artist somewhere that people don't know, and when they make a statement, it doesn't get picked up in the news, someone else could have said this and no one would have cared. They say it, and as we said in the intro, people start to investigate what this means. Is the album dead? Will it change? Will the single redefine what the album is? I mean, just to cloud it with historical fact for a second, at the very beginning, albums were just these empty booklets to hold, or you know, like photo albums to hold 78s. So
right.
when this started, it was just a way of collecting singles, and you can imagine the digital world going back to something sort of like that. They sell you an empty Radiohead album with an interview, or with, you know, access to photos, or a website where you can see Tom York sitting at home. And then you get to select which songs go in there. So I think it will, the form may change a little bit, but I still think that novel, the novel of music, the album, whether it's, I don't know what, Electric Ladyland or Blonde on Blonde or Nevermind or pick which Paul's Boutique, that novel of music has to have some important existence.
All right. There will not be a novel from Radiohead, or at least this is what Tom York is saying, at least not in the next year or two, but there will be a series, apparently, of short stories. The one that leaked is apparently called These Are My Twisted Words, but this is the one that was officially released, the single called Harry Patch, a tribute to Britain's last surviving World War I veteran who died last month. Radiohead and the single called Harry Patch. And we're debating, what is the future of music? Which format holds the future of music, the album or the single? Listeners, what do you think? Is there still a future for long-form music, or will singles rule the earth? You can call us at 212-433-WNYC. That's 433-9692. or leave a comment on the Soundcheck page at WNYC.org. There are a number of comments already. And producer Joel Meyer in the control room is moderating the comments, as he often does. What's it looking like in there, Joel?
Well, John, a few Soundcheck listeners have a lot to say about Radiohead albums versus Radiohead singles. Ted in Atlanta says he hopes Radiohead sticks with the EP or several singles released at once. Ted writes, it's harder to keep track of a constant trickle, though. It seems more inconsequential or scattershot to me. And Alex from BPC has a prediction. Thom Yorke and Radiohead will try to become a singles band, start to miss the longer format, and start producing albums again. You can tell us which format you think is the future, the album or the single, on the Soundcheck page at WNYC.org.
Maura, what about that idea that, you know, after a while, these guys are likely to miss, you know, the bigger canvas upon which to throw their sonic paint, if I can stretch that metaphor, its absurd conclusion?
I can see that, and definitely, given that we are talking about radio hits here, they are one of those bands that's always been, you know, sort of like restless and experimenting with, you know, form and what they do. So, I mean, I could definitely see them, you know, going back to an album for a one-off, or, you know, getting like a big idea in their head and having some, and releasing some sort of suite of songs about, I don't know, some global condition, you know, in order to sort of make that statement. But I mean, you know, I think what I'm talking about more too is just like the flexibility, because the album has become this sort of like calcified ideal in across all types of music. I mean, I thought it was really interesting that when Ben brought up, you know, the records before that he name checked, they were all like pretty rock records, you know. I mean, but when I'm coming at it also from the point of like the pop single, and the pleasure of, you know, one pop single is really, really important. And sometimes there are great pop singles that get lost within albums. And I think that that's something that record companies and artists are going to have to think about when they go, you know, when as they go forward and release music in the future.
I'll do a SmackDown trick, which is agree and then use it to disagree. but I think you're right. I think this idea of it calcifying is really true and is one of the problems. And I don't think it's a problem with the album. I think it's a problem with the people who push albums in their carts and push them into stores. Because if an album can quickly and accurately reflect what the artist is doing and thinking and making, then it's an ideal, I think. If it takes this idea of the 3-year walk up to it and the incredibly elaborate marketing plan, and you get, that's where the calcification happens. Bands used to put out 2 records a year. I mean, really used to, late 60s, mid 60s. And in an earlier version of the SmackDown in 1970 or so, when Marvin Gaye was fighting Berry Gordy over what's going on, and Berry Gordy didn't hear a single, and he wanted singles because Motown was about singles and about charting, and Marvin Gaye said, I want to do something different. I want a series of songs that creates this mood. Marvin Gaye won the local battle, and then for a while won the global battle because a lot of people started doing that. But I think that the point I'll concede, because I think it's really true, is that when the format becomes slow and molassesy and boring, and it doesn't let artists do things that excite them, and this goes for rock as well as pop artists, then it's not going to serve anyone's needs.
Then why would Apple, which, let's face it, is a company that has a little bit on the ball, as they've proven over and over again, and the big four record labels, about whom I will not say necessarily the same thing, why would both of them now be jumping into, you know, the digital album format wars, actually creating a format war?
I think that it has probably things to, it has a lot to do with numbers that we're not seeing, and predictions that we're not seeing, what people are missing from the experience of music when they're downloading it for free, and this probably goes more for singles, is the rest of that experience, the booklet, the album art, the behind-the-scenes footage. When Beck recently started this album club, I forget exactly what it's called, but on his website, he and musician friends of his are getting together and covering classic rock albums. The first one they did was the first Velvet Underground record. And they're releasing songs one after the other, so they're doing it as a single. But they're obviously referring to the album format. So they must know somewhere that people are hungry for this broader, and the sense of community. If I have an album and you have an album, we're experiencing it the same way. This first same song is for, that's how we know it's an album. If you have a single and Maura has a single, I don't know that we're necessarily consuming it in at all the same way. So that sense of community is lost a little bit.
To take a more maybe strike a more cynical note, is it also a chance to sell other stuff at a time when it's become increasingly difficult to sell music?
That's what I think. Honestly, I really think it's the more cynical pose. I mean, if you look at a lot of the songs that have done really well on the digital tracks chart, and, you know, I mean, one thing that we need to talk about here, too, is, like, historical precedent where, you know, in 1998, the Billboard Hot 100 charts were basically changed so that you didn't need to buy, you didn't need to have a physical single available for sale in order for a song to make the Hot 100. And that led to the sort of steep decline of the physical singles market. And, you know, that sort of opened the door for things like Napster, where people could cherry pick tracks and buy, and, you know, just they didn't have to buy like the $15.99 New Radicals CD to get what you give. They could just get that song. And that's something that I think has really opened in the past couple of years with iTunes and to a lesser extent Amazon MP3 and other sites, you know, opening the digital singles sort of box, you know, where people can where people will buy like 420,000 copies of a Flo Rida song, and then his album, when it finally does come out, sells maybe like a fifth of that in its first week.
So
I think it's a profit. I really think it's more of a profit thing.
Let me ask you a different example, and then I want to get to a couple of callers because we have calls coming in on, as you might expect, on both sides of this debate. The future of music, is it the album or the single? Beyonce. Single Ladies, big hit. What does this tell us? I mean, it's from an album.
Right. Well, the thing, you know, it's funny because I was talking earlier about this, like the...
Go ahead, Maura.
Oh, okay, sorry. You know, it's on her album, I Am Sasha Fierce, and the way that I Am Sasha Fierce was sequenced was that all of the ballads were front-loaded on the album, and then the second half was the Sasha Fierce side where she did, like, the dancier tracks. And so by the time you had gotten through all of the songs on that record and Single Ladies came around, it wasn't as enjoyable because you were just like, okay, well, it just didn't hit the way it did when it was just that one burst of song. And I think that there are some records that would be better served by just coming out on their own and maybe not being packaged with like 11 or 12 other tracks.
Beyonce's Single Ladies. Ben Maura makes a good point. You know, it's not a killer single if it's buried, you know, towards the end of an album, you know, that may not be so strong.
That's right. I remember going to a listening event for that exact album, and Beyonce's father was there, and he was presenting it to critics and to journalists and industry people. And the funny thing about it is, I think that's true, but I think there was also a tension there because he was really eager to have people who were there see her as an album artist. And because somehow, and this is probably a psychological mainspring that we won't get to the bottom of, but that's perceived as the adult version where singles are the child version. And he went to great lengths to say she really picked a collection of songs and worked with all these songwriters that really articulated all the different parts of her. And that's what the perception is of the album. And so, yeah, it's a better song isolated, but that's not the fault of the format. That's the fault of the rest of the material being weak.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. We have a bunch of callers that I want to get to. A little bit of Erykah Badu to take us to the break, Ben. This is a sort of an example of someone who has that element of gravitas, of substance to her work, because she is sort of identified these days as an album artist.
And in a weird way, that sort of neo-soul retro funk thing, right, it takes people back to that. D'Angelo, too, although who knows when we'll see his record. I would have rather D'Angelo release singles because we would have had material from him over the last decade.
All right, well, that aside, Ben Greenman is here to basically support the album, and Maura Johnston with us on the line is in favor of the singles. Where do you stand in this debate on the future of music? You can call us at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. We'll also check your comments on the soundcheck page at WNYC.org. Everything changed. Our Soundcheck SmackDown debate continues in a moment, and then coming up later, the British singer-songwriter Imogen Heap joins us to talk about her new album. She'll play live at our piano later on Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Imagine that download stores like iTunes and Amazon were available back in 1968 when the Beatles released their epic and slightly long-winded double record known as the White Album. Would you have downloaded all 30 songs? Or would you have skipped tracks like this one, Revolution No. 9? Come on, be honest. More now in our Soundcheck SmackDown. Maura Johnston of the music blog Idolater.com says that singles are the future of music. But author and New Yorker editor Ben Greenman says the album will never die. You can weigh in, too, and we've got a number of callers on the line at 433-WNYC. And we'll begin with Keith in New Jersey. Keith, album or single?
Absolutely album.
Why?
And I think the reason is that when an album is done right, it elaborates a whole side of the artist's feeling and understanding and you know, just what they are. You know, if you think back to some of the great classic albums, like, you know, Frank Sinatra's in the Wee Small Hours of the Morning, or Miles Davis's Blue, you know, they've
got
a
blue,
particular
yeah.
mood. Brian Wilson's Pet Sounds is another one. So, but it's up to the artist, first of all, to create that collection of songs that you want to hear, you know, and particularly in the order that they choose. And then it's up to the record companies to figure out how to market these things correctly. A more recent example, I think, is
Let me ask you this, Keith. I mean, yep. Talk about classic records. Would you have downloaded Revolution No. 9 from the White Album, or would you have just, you know, gone for the hits?
Absolutely not. I would have downloaded Revolution No. 9. I would have downloaded that whole collection.
Just because
I thought the White Album was so interesting just because it displayed all the different facets of the Beatles. Although, in terms of Beatles albums, it's not the greatest Beatles album. I'd much rather go for Revolver, for example.
Right. All right, Keith, thanks for the call. Let's move on to Lydia, who's here in New York. Lydia, where do you come down on this album versus singles debate?
Well, I really think that it's a bit of a generation debate. I mean, I used to worship my albums and like to think I would have downloaded them, but I live with two kids who are huge consumers of music, and I think they have no concept of what an album really is based on their iTunes and the fact that they have that little word shuffle on their iPod.
Mm-hmm.
I think that for them, you know, the artist is essentially out of time. And they are picking and choosing and creating those digital albums all the time. I think Radiohead isn't setting a trend. I think it's responding to one.
Do your kids, their favorite artists, do they just buy discrete singles, you know, one track at a time? Or do they ever buy, like, a whole record by someone they really like?
I don't think they buy a whole record. I think they buy multiple tracks and they put them together. And so their version of an artist is that single digital album.
Ben, this sort of goes to what you were saying before the break. The album was literally something that you filled with music originally, or, you know, you filled it with photographs before that. It was a photo album. Is that what iTunes is becoming? An iTunes playlist the new album?
Yeah, I think it is in a way, and it's the 100-year, I was informed between then and now, that it's the 100-year anniversary of that album format. It was originally meant, whatever, to collect opera singles or classical pieces in 1909. In some version of that, the problem is between then and now, you've had this entire movement where artists thought on a 40-minute, 50-minute canvas. Now, when you stretch that to 75 minutes, you started to lose a lot of artists or they tacked on random things. But I don't know. I think in the end, this Lydia's call with her kids, there are always going to be artists, just like with authors. You hear the novel's dead, short stories are on the rise because people have less time. Then the pendulum swings back. There will always be artists who think better in groups of songs and always be artists who think better, or producers who think better in single songs and consumers will go to them.
And, you know, it's the same thing in the classical music world. You have a Wagner who could maintain a kind of peak of white-hot inspiration over the 20-plus hours of the Ring cycle, and then you have someone like Schubert who was at his best in the three-minute song. There are different, as you say, different canvases for each of these sides of our debate. One side that we're not getting so much of on the phones, lots of people calling in to support the albums. Maura Johnston needs a little help here, folks. Anybody who's pro-singles, thinks the single is the future of music, give us a call, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Maura, I think to get some backing for your side of the debate, we're going to have to go back into the control room and Joel Meyer and see what's coming in on the soundcheck page. Joel?
That's right. There are singles people turning out on the soundcheck page, not necessarily on the phone, as you had mentioned, John. Rich from Yorktown Heights writes, I don't think there's a big enough audience of intelligent listeners to warrant musicians releasing their material in album format. That said, I'd love to see more album formats, but I fear the number of potential listeners will decrease with the passage of time. Diana from New Jersey writes, I have quite a collection of CDs that have one good song from artists like Fine Young Cannibals, Space Hog, etc., etc. I haven't gotten into downloading singles yet, but I see that as a viable way to get that one song I can't live without.
Now, I'm surprised it took us this long to get to that argument because, Ben, I think that was going to be the biggest chink in your armor is, and you know, you and I and everyone who has a collection of any size of LPs or CDs has this experience. All of the records that have the one good song and you think, why didn't they just release a single and go away?
Right. I mean, the Fine Young Cannibals record, I think, has two good songs, in fairness, but it's...
I actually thought it had three. I actually thought there were three.
Somewhere between two and three, let's say.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think that they... Yes, there are lots of artists, but I really think, in a way, those are CD victims more so than they are LP victims, because I think in the 70s and the 60s, there were bands that continued to release singles, 45s. I think the CD changed a lot of that because there was so much more demand for this vacuum cleaner-like, you know, gigantic long disc and repackaging it. I'm interested for Maura to take this argument. What do you do with those artists who have the one talent for 3 minutes and then they're gone?
I mean, they were sort of like, there are tons of VH1 specials that have been like crafted around them, right? You know, the sort of one hit wonders. And like when I was talking earlier, like about, you know, the sort of rise post this Hot 100 rule change where physical singles were basically phased out, you know, like that was when a big glut of artists that would put out an album that would basically be like a maxi single with 15 tracks would, you know, sort of rise, and people were resentful because that was the only way that they could consume this music at all, save taping it off the radio, which, as you know, doesn't really have the best sound quality. But I think also, you know, this is a really interesting debate just as far as technology goes, because, I mean, I was thinking about it earlier, and, you know, it's not really easy to sort of like put a vinyl album on shuffle or a cassette tape on shuffle. And, you know, the CD age sort of started that, where you could basically take like a, you know, an X number of disc changer and then program specific songs.
Right.
And that was sort of the beginning of playlists.
And of course with iTunes, you have sort of an infinite number of possibilities at your fingertips. I think we've got a supporter of your side, Maura. Larry on the Upper West Side. Larry, is this true? You're a pro single?
Oh, absolutely pro-single.
Why?
The genre of music that I listen to is R&B, soul, pop, and I'm really tired of, like, the Puff Daddies of the world not even putting the mix I like on the album and then releasing that as a single. So going back to the 45s, I was buying singles from the first thing I ever bought.
What generation, I'm not going to ask you how old you are specifically, but, you know, we've been talking about maybe this is a generational thing. Are you the generation that grew up with LPs, CDs, or MP3s?
I grew up with 45s. So I'm in the 80s there.
Okay.
Pointer Sisters singles, you know, heavy R&B, dance music, which you're lucky to find it even on a single sometimes.
Absolutely. All right, we've been debating the future of music with Maura Johnston, editor-in-chief of the music blog Idolater.com, and with Ben Greenman, who's an editor at the New Yorker magazine and author of the book Please Step Back. And I'm going to give the last word to me.
Check out today's Soundcheck blog.
Sometimes an artist has something to say that needs a whole album. And for me, there's nothing quite like that moment when an album finishes and you sit there and think, what just happened here?
For the rest of the story, visit the Soundcheck page at WNYC.org.
Tamara and Ben, thank you both for being with us on this week's Soundcheck Smackdown. I think there is room, actually, for both in the musical future. This album, though, by The Hold Steady, called Separation Sunday, when the album ends, there really is this moment where things have come together over a 45-minute period. I think that's something you can't get from a single. So, still to come, live music in our studio from British singer-songwriter Imogen Heap, and tomorrow on the show, a debate on the state of America's great art form, jazz. Tomorrow on Soundcheck.
The priest just kind of laughed. The deacon caught a draft. She crashed into the Easter Mass with her hair done up in broken glass. She was limping left on broken heels.